Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Josh Brown, a question for the What Culture Gaming podcast, of which, welcome to, and usually I do some sort of intro involving myself, Scott Tilford, the host, and also James Dowse, who isn't with us this week. Sadly, the man's a bit ill. So massive shout out to James Dowse. Hopefully he gets better a bit soon, but you're Josh Brown.
Dude, that was so smooth. That was genuinely smooth. Like, I'm impressed. I would have stumbled over every single one of those words.
Thank you. Now, we thought that we would dive into something that's head first, because a piece of news that did the rounds across the last few days is the idea of Sony remaking Horizon Zero Dawn. However, it might be more of a remaster. It might be more of a director's cut. It might just be a texture pack for all we know. But a document has leaked and showing off various PS5 projects that are in the works, including what is listed as a Horizon Zero Dawn remaster, and also various other things like a Horizon multiplayer game and various other titles that are in production. The date of the document is last year, 2021. However, the conversation that came out of, you know, oh my God, they're remastering, they're revisiting Horizon Zero Dawn already, is that idea that the generation itself is not delivering, the idea that the generation itself is relying too much on the past and not enough on new titles. Now, I did a video a few weeks ago on this and just talked about like the general state, the malaise that a lot of people have towards gaming. And there are lots of easy to go to factors, like, you know, the fact that you don't get the best version of a game day one. You're always better waiting for patches and bugs. And, you know, maybe there's a massive advertising campaign that leads you down a completely different direction to what you bought, etc. And in that, I looked into Sony's stuff and really granularized their...
I like that word.
It's not a word, but it can be.
Make it.
Granularized their output, because if you look at the last couple of years and the newest generation, they are the only team that are putting out like new IP. Like, they put out Returnal, they put out Destruction All-Stars, they put out Kena: Bridge of Spirits, they put out Stray. I know Stray was co-developed at whatever, but they have more of a case for look at our new stuff alongside the old boring stuff,
yeah,
as well, than anyone else. Xbox are dead in the water in regards to exclusives. I'm being very hyperbolic, but I am very disappointed in Xbox personally.
To keep this on brand in terms of our interests, Xbox is just powering up, man. It's Goku about to fight Frieza, and they're powering up, hopefully about to turn Super Saiyan for the first time with all of the acquisitions that they have acquired.
They're in the hyperbolic time chamber, and that's what it feels like. It feels like years have passed, and yet we're waiting for them to just deliver something better than ever.
But yeah,
the wait is killing me.
I think you're right. You know, Xbox, obviously, like I said, they've been powering up. They have been focused on acquiring developers for years at this point, and we're going to start to see that, you know, start trickling out next year with the likes of Starfield, hopefully. And I'm just hoping that kicks things off early next year, and then we get a snowball of, right, what have all of these these developers that you have acquired? What have they been working on, mm-hmm. and when can we see it?
Because to round off the just the opening stuff, I love my Switch. I play it every day, but I very rarely play Nintendo first party stuff. Recently, I have been playing Splatoon a hell of a lot, but even that wasn't, you know, a new Switch franchise. We're 5 years into the Switch's life cycle, and there's not a single Switch born IP. Nintendo are very few and far between with their new IPs anyway. I'm pretty sure Splatoon was their last new IP. Right. Splatoon 1 was 2011 or something. So it's been a while. But Nintendo themselves, you know, if you're a diehard Nintendo fan, like the way the years have rolled out isn't very strong. Like there are some titles to point to, and we've got Bayonetta 3 coming up. But overall, it, you know, you can roll those things together and just say, is this the most boring generation so far? To which you would say, Josh Brown.
I would say it is not a great generation so far due to a lot of different factors. Yes. However, I would definitely say it is nowhere near as boring as the start of the last generation, which
right.
took until 2015 to properly kick into gear. And even then, it was a snowball effect. Mm. If I look at what's happening in the gaming sphere right now, if I look at the technology in the gaming sphere right now, and if I look at the games that have released over the past couple of years, hands down, this is better than that 2013, 2014 period. For me personally, there's just way more going on and way more that I want to engage with.
That's interesting because for me, 2013 was a banner year for video games. Like, well, you can counter this before I detail it.
Sorry, not to jump in.
No, do it.
But I agree. 2013 mm-hmm. was great. But if I were talking purely in terms of generations, and I'm talking like from the start of the PlayStation 4 and Xbox One era at the end of the year,
okay,
and games that released on that. So I'm not talking about The Last of Us or
BioShock or Gone Home.
Yes,
or, yeah.
All of those are awesome.
I was going to say,
I would class that as the tail end of the previous generation.
No, it totally was. I just, when you said about video games overall, I was thinking about the general energy in the industry. If we're talking about general talking points or general feels towards the industry in terms of water cooler conversations or your average conversation with fellow gamers, right now a lot of it is rooted in kind of waiting for the new consoles to deliver something. If you've managed to get your hands on one. And I'm speaking to someone who's lucky enough to have a PS5 and a Series X and a Switch. You're sort of like the general, because I'm not, this whole idea of it being the whole question on is it the most boring generation so far, that didn't come from me. That just came from a tweet that I saw across the last couple of days with a blue tick. I forget who it was. I'm sorry, Mr. Blue Tick. But it was someone who had a bunch of followers and a good few thousand likes and everything. And I was like, oh, that's an interesting talking point because, you know, like I said, if you look into exactly what Sony's been putting out, it's not like they haven't invested in some new stuff. And I love things like Kena Bridge of Spirits. But there is that general feeling of, which is the thing that I can identify with, waiting for the consoles to do what we know they can do.
Yeah.
Or hoping that they can do something other than just remind us of game designs that we've had for many years prior. Like, I'm still waiting for the quote-unquote promise of the next generation to kick in. Like, I remember the whole, you know, not to necessarily fall back on the talk that Mark Cerny did, but he was laborious in going through every little thing the PS5 can do that the PS4 couldn't do. And the main thing, once it was translated and made more palatable by various devs, was that you would eliminate load times and you would have all these really cool visual effects or physical effects or whatever it is. And it would be such a step up in regards to frame rates and, like I said, physics modeling or level design, things that were just so much more immediate and streamlined and everything, that would be the step up. And it's like, oh my God, I can't wait to see what, you know, Corey Barlog or whoever thinks of when they're working with this for the ground up. And things like the likes of God of War being confirmed as a PlayStation 4 game, that was, to me, a blow against that promise, because then you had to make that game work on old hardware, and that's boring. And it's not that I'm not going to love God of War, but if we're talking about what might contribute to the idea of it being a boring generation, it's that we've not seen a Series X game yet. Like,
that's
a full-on, what can the Series X do? It's, oh, it's the world's most powerful console. It's like, well, yeah, but if it doesn't have any of the world's most powerful or technically adept games, then what the hell's the point?
At the start of every generation, we're always, a slayer is born. There's a Buffy reference for you.
I've only seen one episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Firefly, though, brilliant.
I'm pleased I just didn't die in the vine. It really
I wish I could have kept up. I thought you'd done a Doom reference, and I was like, is there a Doom Slayer every season?
Maybe there is. Maybe. At the start of every generation, you know, it takes a while. I almost did the gag again, so just repeat it.
That's how much you love them.
It certainly is. It takes a while for the generation to kick in, and I think that we're still in the period where I have some goodwill for things not kicking in as much as I want it to be.
Right,
yes,
right.
Things like God of War Ragnarok are disappointing that it's, you know, not going to make full use of the PlayStation 5 technology. However, I can cut it a lot of slack just because of the weird rollout of, you know, these next-gen machines with the pandemic and then with the stock shortages. It hasn't kind of begun yet because, it hasn't actually begun in terms of selling the machine almost. You know, you still can't walk into a shop and just buy a PlayStation 5 or kind of even put your name down for a PlayStation 5 and know when you're going to get it.
True.
In the same way that you could this time in 2014, for instance.
Do you think, like, to pivot then into something like Xbox, because they've had so many years to plan for the turn of the generation, and the thing that they've come up for is working very well. Like, it feels like they're playing 4D chess with all the Game Pass stuff and making sure that, you know, you have xCloud streaming and whatever else, attacking all these different fronts other than exclusives, other than, you know, the most direct thing that you would buy an Xbox for, and you end up just kind of getting a Series S or a Series X just to play the best version of your Game Pass titles.
Yeah.
And it's like, and it's so granular, like, what in terms of, like, well, if you get this version or a Series X, you can play it in 60 FPS and 4K versus 30 FPS at 1080, or maybe even 4K at 30 frames a second. Like, that, again, that's such a PC-style approach to the industry that I do find really boring. Like, I remember, like, years gone by before Digital Foundry took off, where the idea of comparing stuff on that level was just so throwaway and just like, yeah, whatever, that's for the fanatics. But that's become like the go-to default way of, am I getting my money's worth? Is it actually good? Like, let me just zoom in and make sure all the eyelashes line up to make sure I've spent the money in the right places. Like, that's such a weird paradigm to have.
It is, but also there's a reason why I think Digital Foundry stuff, for instance, is so popular now. It's because, you know, fans are more interested in that stuff. And I don't think it's a case of developers and publishers trying to enforce, like, that kind of agenda to be like, look, this is what gaming is about. I think that's kind of niche analysis, or what used to be niche analysis, is now more widespread because of just kind of general interest in that stuff.
There's definitely a hunger for it, but it feels like a shame that you have to fall back on it. I think that's true. The thing. I wish if you had SSD focused games or whatever it is, you know, like, insert next gen thing here, focused games, you wouldn't have to go to scrutinize the side by side so much.
I'm going
to
keep going back to the 2014, 2013 generation, because, you know, I do agree that this generation has not got off to the best start, but man, if I'm thinking about every generation before it, I can't help but compare it to what we previously had. And to me, it is better than that era. You know, you were looking at games that were exclusive from the first parties, like Infamous Second Son and Killzone Shadowfall, and they were big steps up graphically, but the fundamentals of the game design itself hadn't changed. You know, those games are fine, but they were pretty boring. You know, they
Just super quickly, as someone who covered the industry, that was my first full year in the industry.
Right.
That was such a struggle. Yeah. Like, 2014 was so hard. I mean, but the thing I said to you before we were recording is that PT is the thing that stood out the most in that year. And part of me would take, or maybe most of me would take a PT or a game with that level of energy around it and conversation. And, oh my God, have you tried this? What is this thing? I would take one of them over a Returnal or a Destruction All-Stars or most of the stuff that Sony's put out in the last, or most of the things that any of the three companies have put out in the last 2 years.
Right. I mean, see, it's hard. It's hard to pass because PT is like the best.
Yes.
And I loved all of the energy surrounding PT when it launched. And yeah, we haven't really had, from any of the first parties, something of that scale where we've all kind of been curious and we've wanted to know more about a project. Now we kind of know what we're going to get. We're going to get God of War sequels. We're going to get a sequel to Breath of the Wild. We're going
to
get more Gears. We're going to get more remakes. And it does kind of like lack that excitement. However, I do think across the board, the quality is actually higher than what it was at this point in the last generation.
It is.
We've had some, you know, potential games of the generation so far in like Elden Ring, and potentially in God of War Ragnarok, certainly for my money, Returnal.
Right.
At this time in 2013-14, I just don't think we had the same caliber of releases, which is why even though those releases may be few and far between right now, because a lot of things, if not everything, has been delayed until February 2023, they're still coming out and we're still having great conversations. Like,
the thing that's interesting in that regard is that when we made the jump from the 7th to the 8th generation, loads of devs started making games for those consoles or were always targeting them. So it's not like, I mean, Elden Ring is a glorified PS4 game or an Xbox One game to me. Like, it plays incredibly well. I love that game. It enraptured us for months or whatever, literal months. It was great. But there's nothing about that game's design that is rooted in, it could only be done on a PS5. It can only be done on a Series X.
Right.
So whereas the likes of Second Son or Shadow of Mordor back then. I think they got old console versions, but the whole idea of them was like they are made for the new systems. Like,
yes.
You know, like that's the thing that I guess people or me or whatever want to see more of.
Right.
I think that's where the idea of it being boring comes from, if I was going to try and pin it down.
Yeah, I totally get that. I totally get the desire to want these machines to fulfill their potential. Mm. I totally get the desire to want to see more games use Unreal Engine 5 because that thing looks unreal.
Yes,
and
good.
Really promises, you know, a next generation experience. Yeah, I guess the thing I'm getting caught up on is the granularity of, well, when I was playing Second Son, when I was playing Shadowfall, when I was playing Knack, was I also...
Oh, they weren't good.
Was I getting experiences then that couldn't be accomplished on the previous generation? And I don't think I was. I don't think it was until, you know, the likes of Uncharted 4 or Horizon or Breath of the Wild came around.
See, if,
I was getting something new. And even then, it was new, but it was iterative in the same way that games, next-gen games now are iterative as well.
Well, the thing is, like, this generation needs a turning point. I think because we waited for a turning point last gen, you would assume that it would be more in place this time, which is to say that 2015 was the turning point for the last gen. That was the year when it was The Witcher 3, Metal Gear Solid 5, and Fallout 4 all in the same year. And again, from a coverage standpoint, that was such a turning point. And we started getting articles that were viewed over a million times. Like, it was a huge uptick on the site. And same on the video side of it, too. And I think that's the thing that you would assume people have learned from. And even if you go on the Xbox side, it's like, well, look, you guys stumbled and fell and just sort of kept walking into the floor like a bug, like a glitch, for so long across the eighth generation that you would assume they'd pick it up and nail it for the ninth. And so when things start to repeat again and the fallback is like, well, this is what it was like last time. It's like, yeah, because that happened last time, you should get it. You should get it right this time. And I think that it's interesting because Sony, for example, tried to when it was like, we believe in generations, we're going to go full bore ahead with the new stuff, and whether it was the pandemic or it's just more financially motivated or whatever, they've had to double down on PS4 releases and last gen stuff and things like that. And it's not that we aren't getting new PS5 releases in the future, but when I see a 2024 release date, I'm like, oh my god, that's still another year and a half away.
I agree and disagree, Scott Telford, because you are right. 2015.
I'm only arguing this side because it's more fun.
No, totally. 2015 was such a turning point. Like you said, we had so many big hitters. And you said there, you know, why weren't they more prepared this time around? Mm. For me, they have been. You know, Sony, especially, and I'm going to Sony a lot because I had a PlayStation 4 primarily back in the day. Mm-hmm. But being a PlayStation-only player in 2013 and 14 was such a waiting game. I had to wait years before Uncharted 4 came out. I had to wait until the quality was of a standard that it properly felt like, you know, I was getting the best of the best from that studio. Mm. And now I just think they've hit the ground running more. And even, I suppose Nintendo isn't really in it because they haven't really started.
We'll circle back to Nintendo because I want to talk a bit more about Xbox too.
Right. But Sony in particular, I do think they've hit the ground running. You know, we've had Returnal. We're going to have God of War Ragnarok. We've had a lot of games from them, and we haven't been waiting in the same way that we were before. But my hypothesis is that 2023 is going to be our 2015.
This it feels
is going
like it,
to be
yeah.
the turning point, because I'm just looking at some of the games that are coming out next year. You know, Starfield, Final Fantasy 16, Final Fantasy 7 Remake Part 2, Suicide Squad, Breath of the Wild 2, Street Fighter 6, Avatar, Dead Space, Alan Wake, Redfall, Diablo 4, Dead Island 2,
this is your, like, your microphone booming across the cosmos voice.
It certainly is. And you know, so many more. I won't bore you with just a list of games that are coming out next year.
There'll be a new Mario as well.
And a new Mario. When I look at those games, and if they do all drop next year, which I think most of them will, because a lot of them were penciled in for 2022, I do think that's going to be the turning point. And when people stop saying that this is a boring generation, because the quality, the potential quality there is incredible. And if we get to the end of 2023 and it wasn't a year on par with 2015, I will concede that I was wrong in my predictions.
You'll eat your hat.
And I will eat my... I've got plenty of hats to eat as well, so I'll go through them all.
The real hat eater has entered the chat. I think that it's... That whole idea of it being a boring generation, it's like the texture of the overall release calendar. It's like it feels quite sparse, especially this year. And you can absolutely say it's because it's still a recovery year from the pandemic, which is totally fair. I think that whole conversation, though, of what does a Zero Dawn remake mean, and extrapolating that into, oh my God, they ran out of ideas, they're just going to do remakes. If it was next year when we found out about this, which was obviously the intent before the document was leaked, it would land, in theory, completely differently, or at least differently, because the texture of that release calendar would be a lot stronger. It would be a lot spikier, let's say, because there'd be a lot more big points in there to talk about. And in amongst that, you would not only be satiated by third-party releases, first-party releases, but it quote-unquote wouldn't matter that Sony are going back and going, and we've also got a Zero Dawn remake.
Yeah.
As opposed to, we've had very little, God of War is also on the PS4, and now we're remaking a PS4 game from 5 years ago. Like, the timing, the optics, that contributes to that boring side.
No, I think that's a great point. You know, Sony especially have been incredibly poor this year in terms of their marketing. Mm. You know, we've talked so many times on this podcast and other podcasts about, you know, why and how they insist on using blog posts to announce everything, and why haven't they done a big showcase apart from the State of Players this year? You know, why haven't they had more of a presence? Why aren't they announcing more stuff? And yeah, I think you're right. That does add to the context in which something like a Horizon Zero Dawn remaster leaks into, because we're so starved for what their road plan is.
Yes.
That if these remasters are all we have to point to, like you said, it makes us worry that the generation is going to be boring and it's going to have no surprises in store for us.
And people need a mix of things they can get in the next couple of months, things they want to look forward to in the future. I feel like as well, you know, the generation that we're in, you're after all the mythical projects came to life. Like, everything happened across the 8th generation, from The Last Guardian finally being real, to Final Fantasy VII Remake being real, to Shenmue 3 being real.
Yeah.
Like, these big mythical, oh my God, maybe this will happen stuff, very few of them are left now. Like, in terms of like big things that you might, you know, the wish. What was that 2016 where it was like the year of dreams?
Yes.
And it became, I'm sure Tim Gettys on Kind of Funny called it that.
Yes, it was.
But there was a, like you mentioned the blogs and everything. Let's talk about blog stuff, because it's like a weird song. Let's talk about blog stuff.
Baby.
Because Xbox did a blog post this morning. That's the whole thing. Blogs posts are catching on. Blogspot.com is where I got my start. But Xbox did a blog post this morning explaining the benefits of the Activision deal and what's happening with that. And one thing that I noticed that was interesting in there is that they said that in terms of the market going forward, Sony and Nintendo will remain the most dominative systems, and they are almost intentionally aiming for third place, which I get that maybe that's just reading the tea leaves and realizing they're only going to line up one way. But at the same time, there was something a bit disheartening about reading that, where, you know, like, it almost feels like they know that they can't beat Sony and Nintendo. They can't beat these legacy systems. They used to certainly try. And for my money, optically, they're very much regarded as beating them in the 7th generation. But that whole thing of like kind of going like, well, Sony and Nintendo are the absolute giants and we'll just sell Game Pass subscriptions and we'll put the app on everything. And they mentioned mobile gaming so much in that blog update that I'm just like, this Xbox is not the one that actually you were built on. Like, this isn't the Gears of War,
right?
The blades on the dashboard, like, all that stuff is in another alien world compared to what you're aiming for now.
I'm going
to
you're
doing a little smirk while I was doing
a
little smile.
Well, I'm just doing a smirk because you're, well, I'm not saying you, but you know, that's taking what they're saying right now in face value.
It's a blog.
Yeah, I know, but you know, they're trying to get a deal through, right?
Yes.
They have incentives to
that's a whole
say,
other thing to talk about too. Yeah.
Like, they have incentives to say that, oh, we're not going to, we don't have any aspirations to be, you know, top of the food chain. They do.
Yes. Oh, God, yeah.
I bet you they do. I think this is quite a
they're literally Palpatine. You know, he's just sort of, just give me the emergency powers. I don't know. I'm not going to do anything. Empire? Who's that? Never heard of it.
Literally, man. Yeah, I think this is, you know, again, not to be cynical, but I think this is a sneaky sort of, not sneaky, but, you know, it's a way to deflect. It's a way to underplay their ambitions, because there's no way you spend all of these billions of dollars on Activision and Bethesda and all of the other studios they've acquired if you don't think you have a chance of, you know, usurping Sony and Nintendo. Like you said, man, they've done it once before with fewer resources than they have or will have if this deal comes through. I get what you're saying and I get what they're trying to say there. I just don't personally take that, press release at face value.
No, I also don't trust it either. I think that, Phil Spencer's gone back and forward too many times on what the Bethesda acquisition means for, as much as I love Phil Spencer, and I think he's done a remarkable job salvaging the Don Callis, I was going to call him, that's an AEW guy.
Don Matrick.
The Don Matrick era, very much salvaged that stuff. But it's not that necessarily that the belief side of it, it's just that it means it's a long-term plan for their generation overall, and the way it's going to roll out is that they're not going to prioritize Xbox exclusives. And the thing is, like, as much as Game Pass is still literally, hands down, TM, the best deal in gaming, it literally just is. You know, the way that Psychonauts 2 rolled out, the way that Sea of Thieves updates have rolled out, like, there's so little fanfare around their releases where it's, they're just sort of like, yeah, you know, you're already subscribed. Like, it's like a new Netflix original. It's sort of like, oh, it's there, I'll get there eventually. And that's kind of like the third place slump energy.
Yeah.
That I'm just, they are comfortable. I remember a while ago when Phil Spencer said that his rivals weren't Sony and Nintendo, they were Google and Amazon.
Yes.
And that was like during the Stadia thing, it was during Luna powering up. And obviously both of those have gone sideways. I think Amazon Luna is still going. Stadia obviously is shut down as of this week, or it will be shutting down very soon, but it was announced this week.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
That whole thing of them just sort of going like I said, they can't beat the big guys, so they'll just settle for, you know, the cheap seats, let's say, the majority of the cheap seats. And like, I forget who said, might have been John Lennon, you'll never go poor playing to the cheap seats.
Right.
And I get that. But at the same time, it's not exactly exciting.
Well, here's the thing, right? In part of what I'm going to say is actually going to confirm your argument there that
I love
they have nothing. Yeah, it's a good part, isn't it? Yeah, the other part you might like less, but I would say that the reason that they haven't had much fanfare around some of their releases is that they haven't had big games yet, which again kind of confirms what you said. But if you look,
it's so telling. I forgot about Halo Infinite, by the way.
Well, I wasn't going to mention that, but yes, Halo Infinite, they kind of made a bigger deal about, and you know that got a lot of downloads. Mm. However, I'm thinking more about Forza Horizon 5. That was huge. That was like, you know, 10 million plus downloads in the first week or even opening weekend. Like, that was a huge hit for Game Pass, and that was a huge first party release for Xbox. So
that had separate physical releases as well.
Totally. Yeah. And I'm wondering whether that is the model that they're going to apply to their first-party games going forward. You know, the likes of Starfield, the likes of The Elder Scrolls, whatever the hell we get next, Gears of War 6. Mm-hmm. And will Game Pass feel more of an event? Will these games feel like they have presence when they drop and once they start coming out? But again, it's just, when do they start coming out and how long will we have to wait for these big releases? Because we've had nothing since Halo Infinite and we've had nothing since Forza Horizon 5 on that scale.
No, and it's that whole thing of just like waiting and waiting and waiting. And also, like I said, optically, Phil Spencer's whole thing is that we're not going to be restricting titles. Everything's going to be available for everyone else, which is the opposite of them saying, we've got 12 incredible studios and everything is exclusive, only on Xbox, only on Game Pass. That's such a minefield for them to navigate that they're obviously, either they're waiting, like we said before, cynically, either they're waiting to pull the trigger on that, or They're not actually going to do that, and everything they're saying is true, and you don't need to even think about Xbox exclusive stuff anymore, which that's the whole wing of gaming that, like, I like when a console has exclusives. I think competition breeds excellence, etc., in a creative space, yeah. And I want to see what a system has to put forward that you can only play on that system. But I don't know whether they are even interested in that mindset at all going forward.
I think they are, and, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, if I'm getting the wrong end of the stick, but when they're talking about they're not interested in exclusives or taking things away from Sony and stuff, is that specifically only about the Activision deal, though? Because they have mentioned with Bethesda that they are going to make, like, a lot of those franchises.
Well, that's, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. That's that, that's before when you brought that up, and I was like, that's a whole other conversation, because it's all in the way they've worded it.
Yeah.
I've long said, I think probably on podcast, that they're going to put a Game Pass app on PlayStation.
Right.
That'll be how it, because it was that whole weird way that Phil Spencer phrased it, where it was like, future Xbox Studios titles will be available in places where Game Pass exists, or something like that. And I was like, oh, I see exactly what you're doing, or it feels like I see exactly what you're doing.
And even with Call of Duty, you know, I know they're trying to say how they don't necessarily want to take people away from PlayStation or whatever at the moment, but, you know, we know that the deal they offered to Sony was to keep, like, the next three CODs on PlayStation, and there's a reason they stopped at three. I'm telling you that now, you know, there's a reason that they stopped at three, because after that, you know, it's open season, and this might change. You know, I for as much as Phil is trying to play, like, not Phil personally, but, you know, Microsoft, this multi-billion dollar corporation.
Just your mate, Phil.
Yeah, my mate, Phil.
Trying to get in.
Phil Chambers. as much as he's trying to, obviously, you know, spin this so that this deal comes through, I do not believe for a second that he's not interested in exclusives. You don't buy all of these studios if you're not interested in exclusives in some form. You don't make Starfield an Xbox exclusive if you're not interested in exclusives.
Well, that was always my side of it. And I think, yeah, like, that's just kind of them, like, kind of reading the road, reading the terrain, but also laying out their own and just, like, rolling with it as they go. And yeah, their most recent update was the blog post where they're just, we're not doing anything, guys. Don't worry about it. We're just third place. That's what we want. We don't want anything else. It's just a little deal that's going through. Don't worry about it. What's a murder? I don't even know. It's fine. Let's talk about Nintendo stuff. Because, like I said, their rollout's been very threadbare. It's not that I don't love, and like I said, I play my Switch every day. It's very much a train console. I've been playing a hell of a lot of Splatoon and you know, Return to Monkey Island and everything else. But the Switch, to me, has become that place where indie games end up when they're on PC and nothing else. For whatever reason, a lot of devs just seem to target the Switch and don't necessarily bring them to PlayStation or Xbox. And so my Switch is my indie machine. It just kind of became that one. But I know that you've not played those very much, and you are on about maybe selling all your games off and everything. So can they get you back in? Is it a tech thing? Because for me, as a regular player, I just don't buy anything that I know will look better on a different system.
Yes.
Like, it has to be something that's only available on the Switch.
That's it, man.
Because 9 times out of 10, you're just going to get a terrible version of a game that runs like hell. Whoa. Even Cult of the Lamb barely runs very well.
100%. My girlfriend is currently playing that Disney game that
As soon as you said that, I was like, that must be one frame a second.
It is. It really is. Scott Tilford. Yeah, yeah. She is playing that, and even she, who does not, you know, does not normally care about resolution or frame rates, keeps saying to me, I wish I got this on anything else, because this runs like ass, and it's chugging. It's really chugging. But yeah, that's the reason I haven't picked up my Switch in a long time as well. Ever since, to be honest, the new consoles came out, because there's such a gulf in technology right now. You know, there already was in comparison to the PlayStation 4 Pro and the Xbox One X, but now it's just night and day, and especially when it comes to third-party games, like, why would I ever get any of those on a Switch? And even the indie games that I play often come to Game Pass, so why would I get them on the Switch again if I can get them for quote-unquote free on an Xbox Series X? You know, I will come back to the Switch when it starts releasing, you know, first-party games that I'm interested in. I do definitely want to check out Splatoon 3, because you sold that to me.
So good.
But like you said, those releases have been few and far between, and in the case of Breath of the Wild 2, which I am hotly anticipated for, has been delayed so many times that at this point I might as well, at least in my head, I might as well just wait for the next piece of hardware that they release, you know?
That's the thing. So, like, yeah, is it just that thing? Like, even with Breath of the Wild 2, I'm watching that. I'm excited for it. Breath of the Wild might literally be the best game ever made. Like, it's right up there. Like, it's incredible. But you look at the trailers for Breath of the Wild 2, and it's like, the Switch is going to struggle with that.
Yeah.
Like, I feel that's why they've only shown us 5 seconds of it, because really we're watching Super Nintendo Switch footage, or Switch 4K, or Switch Pro, or whatever the hell you want to call it, and they're waiting to drop that new system. And part of me doesn't want to play their next big game on the existing Switch from 2017, because that console struggles to run anything in even 720p at 30 frames a second.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing. I mean, it always happens when you get, like, these kind of transition years for consoles. Mm. I remember, you know, not getting a Xbox 360 straight away. You know, a lot of games back then that I knew would be miles better on the Xbox 360, I just didn't buy on Xbox.
Right.
Because why not wait and get a better version of it, or at least the version that I had in my head and was sold to by the marketing teams. And that's kind of where I'm at with Nintendo. Even if I don't know what the next machine is going to be, it has to be soonish, you know, next couple of years. And if a game like Breath of the Wild 2 is going to get a re-release, I personally would almost rather wait and experience it on, in as, because these games only come around once every 5-6 years, don't they? So in my head, I would rather wait and get the best version of that game rather than get it, see the remastered version come out in a year's time, and then have to play through it again.
Yeah, I guess as well, in terms of Nintendo's appeal, like, you know, if you have any sort of anchor point with them over the years, like whether you grew up on Game Boys or you picked up, you know, SNES or GameCube, whatever the hell the thing is, for me, I'm default excited for Nintendo. I like playing my Switch. I like being part of the Nintendo ecosystem. And it's not like they haven't had great games. Like, Metroid Dread is phenomenal. Kirby Forgotten Land from this year is genuinely great. But you play way more Xbox and PlayStation stuff. Would they, like, need to sort of refine their library? Maybe Metroid Prime 4 gets you in. Does it feel like anything can get you in from that established library at this point, or do they need to work on new stuff?
Good question, Scott Hill.
Bosh.
I feel like I've been interviewed now.
I'm full of them.
And I like it. I honestly don't know. Like, new IP, it's kind of a paradox, right? Mm. New IP would be interesting, but that's not why I own a Nintendo console. Right. I own a Nintendo console for, you know, Mario, Zelda,
Ocarina of Time. Can't get enough.
Ocarina of Time. You know, I want the next kind of installments in those franchises. And yeah, if you know, there's a great new franchise that pops up and everyone loves it, I'll definitely check it out. Mm. But you know, I'm kind of just waiting essentially for a handful of games with my Nintendo Switch. And if they come around, that's when I'll hop in. You know, I don't view it, for as much as I love it, I do love it, I don't view it on the same level as my Xbox Series X and my PlayStation 5, which I am playing all the time, nonstop. And that's purely, I think, a taste reason from myself. You know, I love to jump in there to play some indies. Like, I have fun memories playing Detention and Undertale on my Nintendo Switch. But these are exceptions. These are kind of notable exceptions where I'll have a good stint with this piece of hardware. Then I'll return back to my default, which right now is a split between the Series X and it's the PlayStation
that,
5.
Yeah, it's just that general thing of, like, you know, can Nintendo compete in that space of 4K resolutions or potentially 8K resolutions? 8K is on the box for the PS5. We're not going to get that. Even if we do, it'll be at 30 frames a second. But yeah, it's whether or not Nintendo can compete in that space. Do they want to? Do they need to? I don't think they do. I mean, they're flying right now at 720p, 30fps, if it's even that. I mean, most games are less than that. Cult of the Lamb drops into, like, single digits at points. It's been thankfully been patched now.
Yeah.
But oh my God, I finished that game and like 95% of it was just chugging along in the fight scenes and everything. But yeah,
I mean, you know, again, like, maybe I'm just too fickle, man, but I play my Nintendo Switch and I just want it to be better.
Right,
it feels old when I play it. It feels like an old piece of kit in terms of the technology.
Right,
and I'm incredibly jealous when you bring in your Switch OLED and I see how good that handheld screen is, because I mostly play it as well. I mostly play my Nintendo Switch handheld.
You do.
So I'm not seeing it in all of its glory on my television. I'm seeing it on this screen. And I just wish it was an OLED.
Ironically, you've got an OLED TV. If you just docked it, it would look like the OLED Switch.
It's yes and no.
Yeah.
It would look good, but it wouldn't upscale as well.
It doesn't upscale anything. It's just a screen.
Interesting.
That was the whole weird undercurrent, did you know this thing about the OLED Switch, that it's just a Switch.
In my brain.
With a new screen.
Again, it doesn't even, it defies logic. In my brain, I would be noticing discrepancies because it's a bigger screen, whereas if it's a smaller screen, it's like looking at my phone.
Dude, I am the absolute sick madman maniac who bought an LG CX for, what, like a grand?
You did.
And then got an OLED Switch. Thankfully, that was supplied as a review system unit or whatever. Actually, no, Jules got the review unit. I bought an OLED Switch. Anyway, and I was just sat there, like, going in and out, like, OLED Switch in front of my eyes with the seat at the LG right there going, if I just dock it, it's the same thing. It's like a 50-inch TV, but I'm like, hold it. It's bigger if I have the Switch closer to my eyes, and that's the sickness of being a video game coverage man.
It really is. And you know what, though?
Go on.
I will never dock my Nintendo Switch.
You won't?
You can't make me. I refuse to.
But it would replicate the OLED Switch color palette if that's what you're after.
It's true, but also I want an OLED in my hands. Like, the whole appeal for me of the Nintendo Switch, this is the Switch podcast now,
is
the handheld hybrid nature, and it's playing these great games in a handheld fashion. I was never into handheld games before the Switch came around.
Oh.
They were either too small, too finicky, or whatever. Yeah.
It's in my hand.
I hate it. I need a big enough screen for it to feel substantial. And the Switch for me was the perfect size,
where
I felt like this is a chunky boy, but the screen isn't too huge to become untenable. Kind of like the Steam Deck. That also looks like a perfect size. For me, the point of this was I use it in handheld because it's an alternative. It's the thing that I bust out if the television is in use or if I want to play video games in bed, and it serves that purpose and allows it to be played more than it would if it was just trying to directly compete, like you mentioned there, with Sony and Microsoft's machines.
Yeah, that's the thing. I was going to say as well, to address you said before about upscaling and stuff, and it doesn't, the guts of it are the same. It does have a toggle in the options and that does like a high contrast feature,
right?
But that just felt like when you see a TV in a store and it just has that stupid high contrast, whatever that's called, dynamic contrast or something, and where they just push it, oh look, it's an Apple and it's bright red, oh no, it's a feature, and I'm just sort of like, no, like I'm not going to keep it like that. I'm not burning my retinas out trying to convince myself that that's a better picture quality, and that's what the Nintendo Switch OLED has, an option to have deep contrast, but whatever, you know, whatever. Hey, it's the same thing.
Hey, it's still working on me. The marketing is still working on me. I'm telling you, man, I want an OLED in my hands.
If I was in a Persona game and there was a demon that haunted me, it would be the idea of the perfect picture setting and it being unobtainable. It would run away from me and I would run after it, and at some point I have to just admit that it's gone so I can get on with my life. I'm so aware that it's there.
Someone should make a short horror movie about that, chasing that feeling.
Yeah.
What I will say is, Scott Ilford, as you know, I didn't buy it. I got it as a Christmas present. I got Metroid Dread as a Christmas present last December. I have not played it.
No.
Partly because every time I pick up the Nintendo Switch, I just remember
sick.
Visualize you playing Metroid Dread on your Switch OLED in my head. And I know it's not as good on my regular base Switch.
Got to dock it.
I don't want to do that. Because I don't even have a controller for my Switch, Scott Tilford.
Oh, well, that's a whole other thing, is that I have a pro controller, because, again, I'm a sick madman. But at the same time, it's so much better than combining the Joy-Cons on that weird little mesh thing.
Yeah, which is fine.
Rack thing.
It kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks. And the Joy-Con still has the drift, and it just doesn't connect properly. It's a whole thing.
Exactly.
But yeah, Metroid Dread, you can tell why they released that alongside the OLED Switch, to show how deep that contrast palette could go. And it does look gorgeous on the screen. However, all that stuff does roll together with, you know, that was Nintendo's best attempt. It's just funny, like, VR took off for a second, or VR was a conversation for a second, and then it's almost like Nintendo rocks up to the high school show a few days later, and they've got a little cardboard version taped all together. It's like, this is our version of it, guys. And it's like, technically it's VR,
yes,
but it's nowhere near. Like, if the middle tier was a PSVR and the top tier was a Vive or something, or an Oculus, then their little cardboard Labo VR was like, it's good you guys did this, I guess.
Yeah.
But it's just funny, their version of, like, oh, the big lads, the big boys in the school have got 4K screens and projectors and 8K, or they're talking about 8K. We've got this sort of screen that if you don't dock it and hold it enough to your eyes, it looks like an LG CX or something.
What I was going to say is that is good because it caters towards an audience who might not have the money to get regular VR and kind of want a taste of it. But even I don't believe that, because I know how much Nintendo games cost. I know how prices of those games and how they just never go down. And I know how much Amiibos cost and how much, you know, you have to pay to get those things that might not even be in stock for 3 years.
Just because I spent £27 on a tiny figure of a little squid kid so I could do a pose in the photo mode, It's my business and my business.
Tell the people what you did. Did you buy two and only get one pause?
I might have done. So they put... Actually, this is a good PSA for anyone who's a Splatoon fan. In Splatoon 3, they make it so you can only do photo mode poses if you scan an amiibo in. And it's only the existing amiibos. There's some new Splatoon 3 ones, but they're in categories. So like if you buy, like I did, two of the Squid Kids, like a boy and a girl or whatever, they're classed as the same type of amiibo. So when you scan it in, yes, you can scan in the model of that different amiibo to pose next to you, which is still cool, but you only do the same move. And I was like, I'm £27 out of pocket, boys, and I'm stuck with this. So yeah, just PSA, look up which amiibo you're getting. But I mean, the ones that I got were still some of the cheapest, because the likes of Marina, I think she's called, is like £40 or whatever. And I'm like, I'm not spending that. It's not Shovel Knight. I'm not spending that much. But yeah, that whole thing, if you bring it all the way back to the idea of it being a boring generation, or the idea of it not nailing expectations, an expectation was the 4K Switch, or was some sort of follow-up, which I still think we'll get next year, and just how much that tech chase factors into gaming overall. Is it even important to video games? And I think for me, the best games are when they bring those things together, where you can't believe the physics modeling you're seeing, or liquid physics, or the actual game mechanics you've got, or whatever, and you're not thinking about scrutinizing the frame for whatever. It just works. It's beautiful. Like an Uncharted or a Last of Us or something.
Yeah, and I do think that's what we're going to get next year. This is my prediction that I'm making right now.
I think
we've had an okay start to the generation. We've had our starters, and next year is going to be the main course, because like I mentioned, we've got all of those games that I referenced before and more to come that won't even be announced yet. We've got the PlayStation VR 2 coming, my friend. We've got Starfield. We've got something else.
If you can name another Xbox game.
We've got Redfall
is coming out
next year, among other things. And we've got potentially new hardware from Nintendo. And to me, all of that sounds delicious.
It does. It sounds beautiful. What you're saying is we've had a collective chicken chat and we're looking forward to the chicken korma.
Let's go for that.
That's what I had on Sunday.
I think we're going to have chicken and egg. That's what we're going to have.
I don't think that's a dish.
Next year. Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just get like an egg and you just crack it fresh over a bit of chicken.
Speaking of cracking it fresh, I want to break your mind for a second, because when we were talking about VR and we were talking about Labo, I preferred the Labo VR to the PSVR. I thought it was more responsive and it tracked better because it was using the Switch's gyroscopes, whereas the PSVR had those stupid little lights that the lighting conditions in the room could affect it, and my virtual hands would just float away from me. Whereas in Labo, yes, it looked like I was playing in Lego because it couldn't render anything, but I could reliably shoot a gun and walk around and it worked.
Earlier in this podcast, you said that you were sick, and I will not even follow up what you have just said there, other than to remind you of your own words. You are sick. That's correct.
When I'm not putting a cardboard elephant mask on and or fishing cardboard fish.
Well, this is it, right? Because I'm cardboard VR. When we talked about PSVR 2, you said you would get uncomfortable wearing something and looking a little bit silly, or what's going to happen when you put the PlayStation VR headset.
Someone's going to break into my house and I'm not going to be able to tell.
Is it not worse to get robbed while you had a bit of fish cardboard strapped to your face? I don't know.
At least I'm having fun. I wasn't having that much fun on the PSVR. At least the Labo is tracking me and I can reliably catch those fish and shoot with my nose in those mini games. But yes, for now, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. Good Lord, we did a lot of time. We were supposed to get to some news document stuff, but we'll do that as a news video.
We'll eventually.
Go check out the YouTube channel. We've got breakdowns of various things that have happened across the week, including more stuff on the horizon, stuff on horizon. But it's been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford. You've been Josh Brown.
I certainly have, Scott Tilford. There's more horizon on the horizon. Is that what you say?
Zero yawn, because it's been a good podcast. And we'll catch you next week.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus,
Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.